Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
All right, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to a very busy free agency week here on the Buffalo Beat and really all over the rest of the NFL. My name is Joe Biscaglia. With me is my co-host, Matthew Fairburn, and the Bills have been slightly busy, not completely busy, as compared to some other teams out there. Like, for instance, Matt and I are, you know, very thankful that we are not our colleague Jeff Howe, who covers the Patriots and all of their free agency, really their free agency explosion. And so the Bills have done a couple of things in addition to bringing back a lot of what they had back in 2020. So now we're left here to discuss what they've done, what maybe is still to come with them, and certainly some of the more interesting facets of how it affects the depth chart, whether or not they're actually better, which is something we kind of got into on the last podcast, and a lot more there. But Matthew Fairburn, I am very sorry for you, because the Bills will have a backup quarterback that is not named Blaine Gabbert. And I know how much this kills you. Instead, we get Mitchell, not Mitch, Trubisky. It was the big thing that just happened before we pressed record. So Trubisky, not Gabbert. I'm sorry, first and foremost.
It was very close. You know, it feels like this is like a Blaine Gabbert adjacent type of move. Like Mitchell Trubisky is in the same bucket of quarterback. So it's close enough. You know, it's a former high draft pick discarded by his first franchise. Maybe I don't want to put too much pressure on Mitchell, but maybe he can carve out a Blaine Gabbert type career and this can be the beginning of it. So, you know, we could be witnessing the ground floor of the next Blaine Gabbert.
Wow. That, I mean, if you ever needed any sort of stamp of approval from Mr. Fairburn here, then that is it. But yeah, we're slightly in jest here, but the Bills did kind of do something significant here. Even though it's not a significant contract, it's not necessarily one that impacts them on the field in their starting lineup, but it's an important thing to have a backup quarterback. And for those that haven't heard the terms of the deal, the Bills signed Mitchell Trubisky, who was, of course, the second overall pick back in 2017 by the Chicago Bears. They signed him to a one-year deal worth $2.5 million. Brandon Bean said that this is a reset year for him, that they don't expect him to be with the Bills for the long term, that they believe he's going to be a starter down the line. So all of these different things. But in the short term, the Bills have a better backup quarterback, an upgrade at backup quarterback over Matt Barkley. And that's important for a lot of different reasons that we're going to get into. But at the top, the starting quarterback of the Buffalo Bills likes to put his body on the line quite a bit. And if they were extremely lucky last year that he did not get injured and have to miss any games, he did get injured, but he was able to play through them. But so now they at least have a bit of a failsafe here in Trubisky, especially in a year where they're trying to win the Super Bowl. And it is very apparent with all of their re-signings and bringing basically the entire roster back that they're going for it this year. So now they at least have someone to be able to step in. And that is a positive thing for this franchise, certainly because I don't know that Trubisky has like all the faith in the world from people out there and from observers, but he can at least come in and play replacement level quarterback to maybe even average to slightly above average. And that is an improvement from what they had from Barkley.
Yeah, I think it's a position that they needed to upgrade, and one that we've discussed. The, you know, if Josh Allen got hurt last year, the season was over. If Josh Allen gets hurt this year, the season is probably still over. Like, you're probably not winning a Super Bowl with your backup quarterback if it's Mitchell Trubisky, but he certainly gives you a little bit more life than Matt Barkley. He brings a better pedigree to the table as a top five pick. That doesn't mean that he's good, but he does have more experience as a starter. He has a good season as a starter under his belt. It was a bit of a flash in the pan, but still a lot more than any other quarterback not named Josh Allen on the Bills roster brings to the table. So, you know, Matt Barkley was the right type of backup quarterback, I think, for the early part of Josh Allen's career. He needed that mentor type, the guy that could, you know, he could lean on, a veteran that was non-threatening in any way. Now Josh Allen's good enough that he shouldn't feel threatened by anybody. He shouldn't feel threatened by a backup quarterback at all. So they need to get the most talented player possible behind him. And yes, Mitchell Trubisky was a bit of a disaster toward the end in Chicago, but I would, you know, we're talking about backup quarterbacks here. We're not talking about this guy coming in to be a starter. I mean, the Bears just replaced this guy with Andy Dalton. So he's not, you know, any sort of superstar in the making. But I think the hope from the Bills is that you bring him in, Brian Daboll can, you know, work some of his magic. He fits what they do on offense. He can move around like Josh Allen can. He's not that type of athlete, but he can move. And so you don't have to dramatically alter what you do on offense when he comes into the game. And they think that he'll eventually, you know, move on and get a deal elsewhere. I think we've seen around the league with quarterbacks that that's not really a guarantee that this guy will get another chance to start. He'd really have to get a chance to get on the field and show something in order to do that. But I don't think it's a real anything to for people to be upset about. I think upgrading a backup quarterback was something they needed to do, and I think this accomplishes that for a pretty cheap price. Not a lot of money for a guy that, you know, the conversation changes so much with these quarterbacks when they've been discarded once. It's like, well, hey, he's a top 10 pick. Maybe there's something that you can unlock a little bit and find a good backup for a while. So they think he'll be here for a year and move on and go somewhere else. Maybe that's not the case. Maybe they end up finding a guy that can be a backup and can, you know, stick around long term because he's a good you know, second option to have if Josh Allen goes down. And like you said, the way that he plays, that's always a possibility.
Yeah, I mean, the trickle down effect from all of Trubisky and what he could be, that is so important to the Bills just at a very basic level. But even more so, this is an opportunity that they wouldn't have had if Josh Allen didn't take a step forward. I remember having this conversation with you around this time last year where it was like, you know, they wouldn't bring in, like, the conversation was about Cam Newton. And while he was still trying, you know, kind of toiling around in free agency, not really finding a team really quickly, and people wondering, well, what about Cam Newton? It just didn't feel like the right time for them because Newton, with his reputation, would have felt like a threat if anything were to have gone wrong or Allen started off slow, especially with Allen still having some difficulties in 2019, even though he took a step forward. There would still be that temptation for people to start clamoring for Newton to get into the lineup. With Matt Barkley, that threat is completely nullified. Josh Allen went on to have an in-consideration MVP level season last year. So now all of that talk is squashed. And so the Bills can afford to go for a guy like Trubisky, who was a high draft pick, who is a high profile character, and one that they have to know that people know full well what he's all about, especially with what went down in Chicago. That's why they are fully comfortable with doing a thing like this and being able to be like this football rehab for Trubisky to try and get him over to the next stop on his NFL journey. And so I think it was a very smart move by them. The money works, the on-field stuff works. I also, all right, get your bingo boards ready. I also like the fact that they could even get a 2023 compensatory pick for him if it all goes well. I think it's just I think it's a really strong move by Brandon Bean and the Bills to be able to get him in there and to give them some insurance for such an important year in their franchise's history.
They might even be able to get, you know, whether it's a compensatory pick for him down the line or whether he, you know, shows something to where they could trade him or shows enough to where they could trade Jake Fromm as part of a package around the draft or whatever. It's an asset that, and quarterbacks are the most valuable assets of all. We've seen some quarterback trades that, you know, for backup quarterbacks that net, you know, decent compensation on day three of the draft, and sometimes better if a guy shows something. So the Eagles won a Super Bowl with their backup quarterback, a guy that a lot of people would have said, who would have laughed at, you know, if you signed him, you know, same way people do with Mitchell Trubisky. So yeah, I think there's only good things that come from, you know, bringing in as many good quarterbacks as possible. Is this guy a special player that's going to transform his career and, you know, this will be the launching pad to him becoming a perennial Pro Bowler? Probably not. Most likely not. But that's not the goal here. And there's a lot of good outcomes potentially for the Bills from this. It's never good when your starting quarterback gets hurt, and it's a bad thing for a lot of teams. You know, there's not many teams that can withstand it. And I still don't know that the Bills would be able to withstand it for an entire season or for, you know, if Josh Allen got hurt, you know, toward the end of the year and was out for the year. I don't know that any team can withstand that type of drop off, but they're better positioned now to handle a 3 or 4 week stretch in the middle of the season if Josh Allen gets hurt. And that should be the goal, because like you said, it's an important year for them, and they've moved beyond the stage of worrying so much about Josh Allen's development that they have to have the right mentors that aren't threatening him. Now he's developed. He's a guy that can probably give Mitchell Trubisky some pointers. You know, he's a guy that should have the best possible player behind him on the depth chart, because this team is too good to, you know, put their season in the hands of, you know, a quarterback like Matt Barkley or worse, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been Jake Fromm. Like, they're sitting there staring at I mean, it sounded like Matt Barkley was waiting on the line, just waiting for the Bills, with the way that, you know, Bean and McDermott rescheduled their press conference on Thursday from 2:00 to 3:00. A lot of people thought it was for Zach Ertz, but it was actually what they revealed to let Matt Barkley know that they would be moving on, as opposed to the alternative, the tight end discussion. But we'll get into that later on in the show. But yes, Barkley, Fromm, Webb, it would have been a significant drop off with those three. And that's not to say Trubisky is like this all world player. I mean, we all saw his difficulties throughout Chicago, and how the pressure kind of got to him, and how the offense sometimes took some steps forward, but a lot of time took steps back. And he does have his limitations as a passer. I think a lot of people knew that when he was coming out of North Carolina, that they would have to work with him to work through those things, especially the downfield throwing. But that said, I think there is a lot to like there. The fit into a Brian Daboll / Josh Allen offense is also an important one here. You know, it's something that Bean pointed out was him, Trubisky, having the ability to run RPOs, which is not something that I'm sure you're trusting Matt Barkley with at this stage of his career. So Trubisky can move a little bit. So there's just, it all makes sense from a financial and from an on-field and from a future standpoint. So that one, I don't think there's any debate there. Where there could be some debate is with the Bills' other substantial move on a player that is not from their organization from 2020. And I, of course, am talking about Matt Hawk. No, Emmanuel Sanders, the wide receiver coming from the New Orleans Saints, signed a deal that pays him $6 million in 2021. But as I just found out while we were started recording, according to a league source, there's actually a void year in there. So that way it drops down his 2021 salary cap hit from $6 million down to about 4.6 and change heading into the season. So that's at least some temporary relief to the 2021 salary cap. But the bigger question here is, we know what Sanders is. We know what that he's a worthwhile player. But I think the bigger question that you and I have kind of talked about off the air is whether or not this was a smart contract to dole out, especially because the wide receiver market just has not really been great so far this year. And there's a lot of examples that point to that. Like Juju Smith-Schuster, as of the time of this recording, still has not signed anywhere. And he's a very young, unrestricted free agent. And there was even a report that the Steelers and Juju were still talking at this point. And the Steelers are so tight to the cap and over the cap that it would have to be for not a lot of money to bring him back to the Steelers. So the Bills spending $6 million on Emmanuel Sanders is kind of one of those things where it's like, okay, was that worth it given the market and what's going on right now?
Yeah, that's the tricky part. I think you're looking at a receiver who is a fit in a lot of ways. You know, he's a fit in the room as a veteran who has been there and done that. He's played in 3 Super Bowls. He won a Super Bowl. He is, by most accounts, a crazy practice player, a guy that, you know, goes nuts in practice and does, like Stephon Diggs, you know, sort of set the tempo for his teams at practice. He's been productive. He's a great route runner and, you know, a guy that can push vertically but can also play in the slot. A lot of those things make sense. But at that price, I think it's less about – it's partially Sanders versus another receiver because, like you said, the wide receiver market has gone – you know, has moved pretty slowly here in the first few days of free agency. So that's part of it is, you know, what else was out there? You know, who else could they have added? I think Sanders is a fine player. Bringing down that cap hit makes it a little bit more palatable, right? It's more like a you know, a little under $5 million as a cap hit, which is certainly different than $6 million, which, you know, people may think that's not a big deal, but in a year like this one, every $1 million counts. It's another player that they can bring back in some cases. But so to me, the question is probably less about Sanders versus another receiver as it is Sanders versus something else, you know, another position and another need they could have filled. Tight end is still, you know, a lingering question. And Jared Cook signed for similar money on a 1-year deal with the Chargers. Pass rusher is still a question. Hassan Reddick signed slightly more money than Emmanuel Sanders, but not nearly as much as a lot of people thought. And on a 1-year prove it deal with the Panthers. There is a Temple connection there. So, you know, who knows if the Bills could have gotten a similar deal, but point being his market cooled. The pass rusher market is not, you know, super strong right now. It moved a little bit in the early, you know, days of free agency, but there's some decent veteran options out there that, yeah, if the Bills moved some money around, they could still figure out a way to maybe bring one of them in. But, you know, in a year like this one, with so little cap space for the Bills, those $5 to $6 million deals, you know, there's an opportunity cost attached at other positions of need that perhaps are more pressing. You know, how many snaps or how many targets is Emmanuel Sanders going to get in this offense? I know they run four receiver sets, or ran four receiver sets more often than every team besides the Cardinals last year, and they ran three receiver sets very often. But I think most people would agree that Gabriel Davis looked at times ready to step into that number two role, especially in the playoffs. So you're talking about Emmanuel Sanders being, you know, a number four, or an occasional, you know, outside boundary guy, a luxury in some ways. I think it maybe tells you a little something in terms of, you know, it's an option if you don't get that second tight end that you want, right? If you don't, you know, find the way to get Zach Ertz, then you can have four receivers out there more often. And having both Sanders and Beasley in the slot sounds like a lot of fun. But, you know, as we see the rest of the market develop, as we see free agency unfold here in these next few days, we're going to see some other $5-6 million deals or less than that. And, you know, it's fair to look at those and say, you know, would that have been more helpful to the Bills becoming a better team in 2021 than a receiver who may not get a ton of targets in this offense?
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Yeah, it almost kind of felt like that the Bills had just decided that they were going to add Emmanuel Sanders before this whole thing even began. As soon as they found out that he would become available, and likely pegging that he would become available because the Saints were, as they always are, under a lot of salary cap duress and needing to do a bunch of different things to get under the cap. I know the popular take down in New Orleans is the salary cap doesn't exist, but, you know, they have to do all those things to make the salary cap not exist. So apparently the salary cap does exist. Anyway, the Bills probably knew, had a good feeling that Sanders would be on the open market. And I found it interesting in the press conference that when Sanders was brought up, Bean and McDermott alluded to the fact that they have been watching this guy for years and that they've been tracking him for years and trying to get him to Buffalo, you know, a couple years ago, trying to acquire him at the trade deadline before he went off to San Francisco. I think that there was a report back then. And then probably, I think last year was the Diggs year, so maybe not then, but even still, having all of these different times where they were have been long been interested in him, but he's still a 34-year-old wide receiver, and it doesn't seem like they were open-minded, at least with how quickly they signed him to a contract after he was officially released. It didn't really seem like they were open-minded to other names that were out there. I mean, it's good. Everything that we're talking about for the on-field stuff is good. I mean, not adding a player that would totally cut into Gabriel Davis's time on the field. Sure, great. Four wide receiver sets. They needed something other than Isaiah McKenzie. But all that said, could they have done more with that money? Even though the cap hit isn't totally $6 million, you still have to wonder, could they have done more with that type of money, or maybe used it on two different positions? It remains to be seen what they'll make of this. Now, if Gabriel Davis doesn't take that step forward and they need Sanders to be a starter, then sure, home run of a pickup and someone that they know they can count on to come down with some clutch receptions. But if he ends up just being a fourth guy and they miss out, let's say Keelan Cole takes off with his new destination or something along those lines. I don't necessarily think Keelan Cole is going to be if he were to come to Buffalo, he would be trying to take over that Gabriel Davis starting role. So I'm just very interested to see how the wide receiver position kind of shakes out here and if this whole contract will actually be worth it, especially thinking about what could have been had elsewhere.
Yeah, I think, you know, you bring up an important point, alluded to an important point there about them sort of zeroing in on him, because I think the idea about this offseason and about this period in free agency was that waiting it out, there would be some values, right? There would be some guys that you could just pick up for close to nothing because the market would slow down very quickly. And that's sort of the question here is, you know, I don't know that they allowed time for that to happen at wide receiver. And, you know, like you said, on the one hand, that could work out. You know, you identify a player that you know fits your scheme, a guy that you've been after for a while, a guy that wants to be in Buffalo and, you know, has a proven track record of success in the postseason, then that's, you know, that could work out. That could be a good move, but there could have been cheaper and there could have been a different position. So I think something, I believe it was Sean McDermott said, it might have been Brandon Bean, I may be misremembering, said, you know, at the that Brian Daboll wanted to make sure they didn't lose their fastball, and that they wanted to still be a really dynamic passing offense. And you see that in the signing of Emmanuel Sanders and the you know, reported interest in Zach Ertz and the real lack of urgency to, you know, make dramatic moves on the offensive line, just keeping the group together. We'll see what happens at running back, but, you know, nothing, you know, major to speak of there at the moment. So they know they're a passing team and they want every target at Josh Allen's disposal that they can possibly find. So will there be a better deal in the coming days that somebody gets on a receiver? I could almost, you know, assuredly say yes, because the deals only get better as the days go along. Just look at, you know, the receiver contracts the Patriots signed, you know, early in the week. And then Curtis Samuel goes for a, you know, pretty affordable deal, around $10 million, a little over $10 million a year.
I know the Samuel one is the one that really I'm glad you brought that up, because I totally forgot about it. Samuel going for 21 over three. That's just like, you could have had that guy. And I know he probably affects the Gabriel Davis situation more than Emmanuel Sanders does, but man, that's someone who seemed like he was severely underutilized in Carolina, and one that really could have done some nice things in Buffalo had they brought him there.
Yeah, and young, and his best years are in front of him, you know, for sure. And Emmanuel Sanders' best years are not. And I think, you know, Curtis Samuel is on the brink of a real breakout. I don't know how quickly it'll come in Washington until they figure out a quarterback. But I don't know, maybe Ryan Fitzpatrick can get him the ball. But yeah, I think it's fair to look at that contract and then look around at the other ones, because, and it's a tricky balancing act for Brandon Bean and these guys. You could sit around and wait and the market doesn't come down, or the guys that end up getting left over aren't all that good, and you sit there and let a guy that you really want get away. It's not super surprising to see this type of move when you think about how they handle things in the draft. They're not afraid to move up a few spots to get a guy that they really want, as opposed to sitting around or trading back and taking what's left. So they identified a guy that they view as a really good scheme fit and a guy that'll fit right in their locker room and make their offense better. And, you know, we'll see if that's the case. They've been pretty good with free agent wide receivers. So
yeah, they have.
I think, you know, this could be, you know, a pretty good match. But yeah, it's easier to nitpick and dissect the value when every million counts. You know, last few years it was like, oh, they overspent on John Brown or Cole Beasley. So what? You know, there's almost no such thing as overspending when you have that much money.
Right.
But when you're in this situation, you know, every few million dollars means another player here or there, especially with all the guys that they're going to have to let go, you know, that are you know, just free agents that they probably would have brought back, you know, no brainer type of stuff. It took a few days, right? Like they couldn't afford it, their punter. You know, they wanted to move on at punter because they couldn't agree on something. You know, Isaiah McKenzie's sitting out there, you know, so little things like that, that, you know, every, you know, few million dollars can help push you over the edge. So I think overall, solid move on Sanders. It's just a matter of, you know, looking around and seeing what else they could have had that takes some of the shine off it.
Yeah, definitely. And you make a good point about the free agent wide receivers thing and them probably deserving the benefit of the doubt with that, knowing what Allen needs and everything along those lines. The one thing I will say, though, is I don't think this takes them out of the market for a drafted wide receiver. I think it takes them out of the market for Isaiah McKenzie, probably, unless he signs for a very low contract. But I don't think it takes them out of the market to draft a guy at the position, especially if that receiver can return kicks and punts. Because now they brought back Tywan Jones. That one is confirmed. So he's going to be their special teams gunner and one of their important kick blocking guys. So that means they don't have to keep Jake Kumerow to fulfill the Tywan Jones role, which opens up a potential roster spot for another wide receiver. I would not be surprised if the Bills added a wide receiver at some point, maybe even early in the draft. You can't really rule anything out with them in this draft this year because they're just all over the place. I would anticipate they're probably going to have a tight end before too long, and at least someone to combine with Dawson Knox. And so I don't necessarily think that they have any one specific thing that they just have to draft. Like, if they didn't do anything along the offensive line, then they would have had to take one of those. But now anything is up for grabs. It maybe offensive tackle is out of the equation now because they have both those guys locked up, but wide receiver, it very much in the conversation.
Yeah, I think, you know, you can find a wide receiver or a running back at some point in the mid to late rounds who can return kicks. But if the right type of player is there early, I think of Kadarius Toney comes to mind as the guy that can, you know, do those things and be Isaiah McKenzie type, you know, but probably quite a bit better at returning kicks at, you know, end arounds and things like that. So they're in the position to do what Brandon Bean says they always want to do anyways and take the best player available. I think the past few years have shown that usually means best player available at a position of need. But right now they don't have glaring obvious needs. So they have that flexibility going into the draft where they could justify taking a handful of positions. Now, I would say their needs or their biggest need on paper is a tight end right now. But you don't really want to take a rookie tight end and bank on that fulfilling that need. You could try it. That would be showing a lot of faith in Dawson Knox, which I wouldn't have a problem with. But it definitely seems like they're interested in exploring some other options there, you know, find a veteran to compete with them. And so that to me is an iffy spot for them to spend a first round draft pick. I think cornerback is probably right near the top of the list in terms of needs. You know, they said they, you know, like the idea of Levi Wallace and Dane Jackson competing for that number two job. Those are two pretty good players. I don't think it would be a problem if they went into camp with those two guys, but they sure wouldn't mind, you know, going and having a, you know, first round talent to throw into the mix as well. You can't have enough cornerbacks in the NFL. The Bills aren't the only team that like to spread the field on offense. So I think that's a top spot. I think offensive line is still weirdly in the conversation because despite what they did with Darrell Williams and John Feliciano, and Mitch Morse for that matter, they're not tied to those guys for a long time. They're tied to Mitch Morris for one more year. They're tied to John Feliciano and Darrell Williams essentially for the next 2 years. So you can draft a center. You can draft a guard. You could draft a tackle. You know, maybe you wouldn't do it in the first round, but you could draft one, slowly bring them along, and, you know, eventually transition that way. So, you know, that's a possibility. Edge rusher is a possibility, another position they haven't addressed. But again, like tight end, not a position that you're necessarily banking on early impact from a guy that you pick at 30. Not, you know, the strongest edge class. So, you know, that, but that's another spot still that they could use a little something, some juice in their pass rush, whether it's an edge guy or whatever else. But yeah, it's harder now than it was a couple weeks ago to identify the easy, obvious draft needs and fits in the first round. I think cornerback to me is probably the spot. Corner and edge, you know, what best of those two at 30 is probably the direction I'd think they go as of right now.
And the Bills are also pretty good that at finding cornerbacks later, maybe not a lot later, but I would say on day two, if they manage to find something else that they liked in the first round, they don't have to force a pick of the corner.
Yeah, they haven't really tried, oddly, since they've been in Buffalo. They were good at it in Carolina. But
that's what I was thinking about, like Bradbury and all of those guys.
They haven't really attempted that here. And I think that's probably why they've had such a revolving door there, right? Like they have an undrafted guy in Levi Wallace, a seventh round pick in Dane Jackson, these, you know, patchwork deals for, you know, guys like Josh Norman and EJ Gaines, and others that I'm forgetting, that seems like Kevin Johnson was here at one point. The guy who took the Uber, his name is escaping me.
Sharice Wright.
Yes. So they've had a ton of guys, but yeah, they have this reputation from Carolina of being good at developing mid round corners, and they haven't really tried because they took Tre'Davious White so early. So, probably what I would say is they're most likely, you know, fit in the first round, but like you said, not, they don't have to, and they don't have to do any position really at 30.
No, they really don't. And that makes them somewhat dangerous, and it actually makes them pretty fun to do a mock draft for, if I'm honest. It's going to definitely create a lot of different opinions as we go forward, and it's only going to get louder because it's only March 18th. We're not going to shift totally into draft stuff, but I do want to come back to the tight end group, because this is the one that I think the Bills, if you have to pick one position right now that they still need to make a move on with a veteran player, I know we've discussed it really at length, but it just almost seems like the roster is begging for a veteran player, a more experienced person, either to be the starter or to pair with Dawson Knox and maybe run a little bit more 12 personnel. I know there's some thoughts out there like, oh, just don't even bother with a veteran guy and just draft Pat Freiermuth or Freiermuth. I don't know how to say his name yet, from Penn State, who they called Baby Gronk there, even though our Dane Brugler, our draft expert at The Athletic, has kind of said, probably not too many similarities there between Gronk and him. But that's a line of thinking from some people out there, but I just don't know that the Bills would risk that, especially with the lack of production that they've had from Dawson Knox, and because they still believe in Dawson Knox and they want to continue to develop him, even if they bring in a veteran tight end, which is why that brings us back to the Zach Ertz, Cameron Brate, no longer Jared Cook, Richard Rodgers discussion here, because the Bills, it feels like they're light at that spot, and they still have the opportunity to do a move for one of those guys, whether it be with Like, they can open up $7.5 million on this year's salary cap by doing a conversion of Tre'Davious White's base salary to signing bonus. It's not something they want to do too much of, because eventually it'll burn them in the end. But if they do one of them, they're okay with someone that they know that there is going to be there for quite some time, which is Tre'Davious White. So that's why there's cap room there. The flexibility is there. It gives your offense a different dimension. It allows you to maybe even run the ball a bit better by putting a couple of tight ends out there that still have the threat for you to pass the ball, even though you're running. Like, if you put Lee Smith out there with Dawson Knox, people know, they're probably going to run. But now it gives that little seed of doubt, which is why it all comes back to that. Like, go get an Ertz, go get a Brait. Heck, go get a Richard Rodgers if the other two don't pan out, and just figure something out there, because they sorely need something in addition to Dawson Knox. Because all due respect to Tommy Sweeney and to Nate Becker and Reggie Gilliam, they aren't it. So they need a more practiced hand at that spot.
Yeah, I think it's the easiest need on the roster to identify as a veteran tight end. And you know, people will laugh at the Lee Smith trade, but I think it only further cements that need of, you know, somebody that can do, you want somebody ideally that can do what Lee Smith does as a blocker, but can also contribute as a receiver, but also have that presence in the room, that veteran who can, you know, help Dawson Knox along, because it feels like he needs it after last year. I'm sure that wasn't a good year for his confidence. He's had a lot of drops in his first two seasons. He's pretty raw at the position in general because, you know, he was late to it. Didn't get thrown the ball a lot in college. So it seems like a real glaring need at the moment. And like we said, they'll probably, you know, sign one about 30 minutes after we post this episode. Hopefully we post it this time so that it has time to live. But whenever they do, because I think they will, it just has a much bigger impact than a rookie would, I think, at that position. It's a notoriously tough position to develop. It takes time, and you know, it's really hard to bring those guys along, which is why year three you would expect something out of Dawson Knox, but banking on it, you know, on its own is tough to do. So yeah, the names that are left are not super inspiring. Zach Ertz would be the best of the bunch. Kyle Rudolph got signed. Jared Cook got signed. Obviously, the other free agent tight ends got signed to huge money in New England. So this is kind of what they were waiting for, that second, third wave, and you grab a veteran that can, you know, bring a little different dimension to the offense and give you more options, because last year they didn't really have it. You know, they had Tyler Kroft, you know, active at times. They had Lee Smith active sometimes, but, you know, they didn't really have two tight ends that were a threat. So I think it's really something that needs to get done at some point. And I do think they have the flexibility to make it happen.
Yeah. And it's not like, they can wait for the price to come down on one of those guys, because the Eagles and Ertz both don't want that relationship to continue under the current contract. Like, Ertz wants to get paid, and he also wants to go elsewhere, knowing that, or likely wants to go elsewhere, knowing that they're committed to Dallas Goedert, and things are changing in Philadelphia. He knows it, and he knows he's probably not a part of their long-term plan. So just like anybody would, he wants to go where he's wanted, right? I mean, it's not someone that's just kind of like stringing it along to see what they can get for the player. He wants to go where he's wanted. So I would anticipate that ends up resolving itself. Now, it's just a matter of if the Bills, because Benjamin Albright reported that the Bills were in the mix for Ertz along with the Chargers, and the Chargers obviously dropped out once they signed Jared Cook. So now it's a matter of if the Bills will match a demand versus the Eagles dropping their demands. And I would tend to think that the Eagles probably wouldn't want to release him for nothing. So this could just be like a bit of a trade standoff at this point, you know, where you lock in to say, okay, we're willing to spend this much, and that's it. And if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen, and you move on elsewhere if you need to, like to a Cameron Brate or to more of a depth option, and then try to develop Dawson Knox a lot quicker. But I don't think Brandon Bean wants to commit a day two pick for Zach Ertz. I don't think he sees that as realistic for what he wants to do long term. I think if it's an early-ish day three pick, I think that would be fine to do. It's just a matter of who blinks first here. And if the Eagles are really dead set on stringing this out as long as they need to, and it from the way that people that cover that team have seen them operate, they usually drag it out until the other team blinks. So I guess we'll just end up having to see what happens with Ertz.
Yeah, like you said, the Bills aren't in a position where they need to rush. You know, if it's not Ertz, then, you know, the rest of the guys are, you know, comparable in a lot of ways. So I think Ertz is the clear best one remaining, and, you know, they can sit around and wait. And that's probably why there hasn't been another move, a Jared Cook or somebody like that, because they're waiting to see how that plays out. So I think...
By the way, did you see that Rudolph contract? Oh, God.
Yeah, he ended up being, what, around 8 or 9 annual?
That one, the original value that they posted wasn't the right one. The agency, I think it's more so around, like, 14, 13 or 14, but, like, still, woof. Rudolph is not that player anymore.
Yeah, that's probably not a price range that the Bills were going to go to for him. And, you know, he would have... That would have been as much about the off-field impact as it would have been about the on-field impact, but you can get that elsewhere. I think you can you don't have to pay what, you know, what they paid for Kyle Rudolph. A little bit, you know, I like Kyle Rudolph. I think he's pretty decent. He's lost a step, but again, an example of they don't need to reach and overextend themselves. They can't afford to do it, number one. And in this market, there's going to be, you know, some random value to be had somewhere. And it doesn't have to be Ertz. It doesn't have to be a specific guy. It just has to be somebody at the right price. And I think I'm confident they'll find that eventually. Won't be a game changer. It won't, you know, be something that transforms their offense. But if it's Ertz, you know, that could be interesting. That opens up some possibilities for him, for sure. Beyond him, you know, they might not get that level of player, but it is something that this offense will need, especially with Kroft and Smith out the door.
Yeah, the other reason they don't have to rush is because they don't have any other contracts that they would be trying to change or get rid of that have a roster bonus deadline day of March 21st. Like, all of those guys have been decided upon, whether they were cut, traded, or restructured. So now it's just the Bills have the luxury of waiting to address that tight end spot. And if Ertz becomes available at a manageable cost, they can do it by doing that, that very simple conversion of base salary to signing bonus. But if it never comes to pass, then they're still under the cap. So they have the flexibility to do it. They just don't have to if they don't need to. So that's a good spot to be in for them.
Yeah, no doubt. I think overall, as we zoom out and take the big picture view of what they've done over the last week, they're not a dramatically better football team than they were when they started. But they were going to be hard-pressed to become one anyways. There was going to be trade-offs. There was, you know, always going to be an opportunity cost associated with bringing back the players that they did. You know, that, and that's where they're at right now. They basically don't have any money to be throwing around until they do more restructures and things like that. So I think bringing back Milano and Darrell Williams, as we talked about last week, a huge deal for both sides of the ball. Mm-hmm. Bringing back John Feliciano helps keep that offensive line together. They're very much going with the approach that continuity and keeping the band together is going to be enough. You know, they made the addition of Emmanuel Sanders, but they haven't really, you know, made, you know, other additions that are substantial to this roster. So I think, you know, are they a much better team than they were at the start of this? No, you could argue they're worse because they've had to get rid of some players, but they're banking on the fact that they've got the best quarterback in the division as we sit here today. As long as there's still a chance Deshaun Watson gets traded to the division and changes that conversation, although, you know, people will certainly like to argue that one. And they think enough of the pieces around them are still in place that they can run it back. And, you know, we'll have a long off season to debate that. And they've got the draft still to upgrade their roster. But it may not be the worst, you know, approach, because if they had not brought back their offensive line, they're looking for, you know, some offensive linemen. There might have been a way to pull it off. There might have been a way to do some swaps, let guys go and try to get cheap guys like, you know, veterans that got let go and patch together an offensive line that way and save up some money for a pass rusher or one of the tight ends. But it would have been a lot trickier, and they really put a premium on bringing guys back and keeping this group together. There's plenty to unfold to find out if that's a strategy that will help them get to the next level, because there looked like there was a significant gap between them and the Chiefs in both games that they played. And the Chiefs have, you know, made some moves and they're not going anywhere. And the Chiefs didn't even win the Super Bowl last year. So will it all be enough? I guess we'll find out. But I don't have a huge problem with the approach that they took, because, you know, they got some pretty good deals, and going into free agency hoping to get similar or better deals is always a risk.
Yeah, I think that's all well stated. You know, they're still, and the offseason isn't over yet. So, I mean, if they were to bring in someone like Ertz that we've been talking about, then they're still potential for them to get better. Or let's say they move up the draft board and take someone that they think can be an impact pass rusher. They can't move up too far because I don't think they want to jeopardize the rest of their draft, but let's just say they do that for argument's sake. Then that, you know, does change the scope of the conversation a bit. You know, the Chiefs obviously have completely reformatted their entire offensive line to try and deal with what Tampa Bay threw at them last year. And so they're getting a lot of positive marks because of that. But the Bills also believe what they had with their offensive line was pretty good. And so they're taking the continuity approach. I mean, I guess we'll just have to see if the players within the system are the ones to take that step forward, rather than going for the foreign players to bring in and to try and buoy the roster even more. That's going to be the thing that defines their season above all else. Like, can Cody Ford take the step forward that they need him to become an impact run blocker and to improve themselves that way? So that way the Bills can become a tiny bit more balanced, but just a more threatening running team than they were last year. Can Ed Oliver take the step forward now that they have Star Latulule back and probably eating up some blockers to be able to make some more high impact plays in the backfield? He was good last year, but can he take that step to being great and to help take the defense to the next level? Can Tremaine Edmonds take that step up into the upper echelon middle linebacker conversation? Like, those are the big additions that the Bills are probably banking on. And I would say Gabriel Davis and Zach Moss probably fit somewhere in that conversation too, maybe just not as much. So yeah, that two different ways to go about it. one costs a lot more than the other on the open market, the way that the Chiefs are doing it as compared to the way the Bills are doing it. And we'll just have to see if the Bills' belief in the players that they've drafted are going to be worth it in the end, because that will end up being what defines them. There's no way around it.
Yeah, that's where you can't build as much through free agency as you did at the beginning. You know, so you need the development from the players on your roster, and you can't really afford for them to just, you can't afford for all of them to just be good. You know, some of them have to be great. And that's what we saw with Josh Allen last year. We've seen it with Tre'Davious White and Deion Dawkins, Matt Milano. Now it's Tremaine Edmonds and Ed Oliver. Will those guys take the step to becoming great players that can, you know, help that defense get to the next level? Because much like on the offensive line, the defensive line has stayed the same besides subtracting Quentin Jefferson. So on paper, it's a worse group unless A.J. Epenesa and Ed Oliver rise to the occasion and become, you know, those types of players that they drafted them to be. So, yeah, it's
I'm glad you brought up Epenesa. I forgot about him.
So did I until I was rattling off names. But he's another one that if he can take that step, he's as good as whatever pass rusher you're going to find at this point in free agency if he takes that step. So it's all about those, you know, draft picks a couple years ago. That's as important as, you know, Brandon Bean brought up how important this draft is. Those drafts are as important. You know, all these guys that they've re-signed, the draft picks that they nailed, those are all 2017 picks outside of Josh Allen. So, you know, Josh Allen looks like a home run. What other 2018 and beyond picks are going to step into that, you know, that tier of players so that they can have, so that tight end isn't a problem, right? Dawson Knox steps up and becomes a good player, then tight end's not a problem. If Ed Oliver and A.J. Epenesa step up, then we're not talking about the pass rush as much as we were. So, you know, that's all part of the equation here, and it just puts a lot more emphasis on, you know, how they develop guys, but also how they draft this year and beyond.
It will surely be something to monitor. And like we said, the Bills still aren't done. I still think they have one move left in them, but it just remains to be seen what that is. And, you know, at least on this episode, we talked about other stuff at the start of it. So that way, if something actually happens, people will just listen to like the final, I don't know, say 15 minutes and be like, oh, well, that's unfortunate. But at least we got a good 35 minutes in there of talking about Emmanuel Sanders and Mitchell Trubisky and all that good stuff. So yeah, I think there's not going to be an extreme chop that needs to happen, and we won't have to re-record at like 11 p.m. or something like that. So I'm happy about that.
Yeah, I think we better wrap up here in a hurry before something happens. I've been just have one eye on my Twitter feed waiting for something to drop here. So put a bow on this one so that if something does happen, we'll just start anew with another episode at some point in the coming days.
And we will have to think, because our producer, Marissa, mentioned the idea of maybe having a Mitchell Trubisky award this season. So we're going to have to think on that. And we're just throwing things out. But
well, we don't have Matt Barkley anymore. So
I mean, you still could name it after Matt. We
people
still
don't want to
talk about the namesake
forget.
Vontae Davis. Yeah, exactly.
So I think, it's all being considered. You know, we look to get better in every aspect, always looking to get better and improve competition and depth at all spots.
Well, I mean, we're just all encompassing here. Okay, so that'll do it for us. The next time you'll hear from us, maybe next week if the Bills do something substantial, but if not then definitely the week after that, to kind of take a big picture and maybe delve more into the draft as we're a little bit closer, because we're about a month and a week or month and 10 days out from the actual NFL draft. This offseason has been quick, everybody. It really, really freaking has. Okay. So for Matthew Fairburn, my name is Joe Biscaglia. Thank you everyone for listening to this episode of the Buffalo Beat. And hopefully it's not obsolete in a couple hours. Talk to you later.